This podcast of Science Friday is brought to you by Audible.com. With over 100,000 audiobooks, including titles from our Science Friday book club, for a free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/Science Friday.
This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A recent flurry of extreme weather events, including wildfires, heat waves, and droughts, may have convinced more Americans that the planet is warming. A poll by the Brookings Institute found that 62% of Americans now believe in global warming, and nearly half of them cited warmer temperatures or a change in weather patterns as the reason for their belief. But will climate change be on the agenda during the upcoming presidential science debate? During the 2008 vice presidential debate, it was, as Gwen Ifill asked Sarah Palin about it.
What is true and what is false about what we have heard, read, discussed, debated about the causes of climate change?
Yeah, well, as the nation's only Arctic state and being the governor of that state, Alaska feels and sees impacts of climate change more so than any other state. And we know that it's real. I'm not one to attribute every man activity of man to the changes in the climate. There is something to be said also for man's activities, but also for the cyclical temperature changes on our planet. But there are real changes going on in our climate.
If Sarah Palin admitted back then that global warming is real, does this mean that we'll hear more about climate change, or for that matter, science in general, on the campaign trail this year? Ms. Ifill told us today that she chose to ask that question, knowing that it would probably not be asked in the presidential debates, but was important enough to be discussed. Will Barack Obama and Mitt Romney discuss and debate basic scientific issues like innovation funding of research, energy, and the internet, just to name a few? Or will it be more of the same, leaving science out of the discussion? Even though a Pew survey shows that Science News and Discoveries ranked at the top of the list of topics that don't get enough news coverage, 44% of people said that science just isn't covered enough. Joining me now to delve into some of those questions are my guests, David Gergen, a professor of public service and director at the Center for Public Leadership at Harvard Kennedy School. He is also a senior political analyst at CNN and has served as advisor to four U.S. presidents. He joins us on the phone. Good to talk with you again, David.
Thank you, Ira. Thanks for inviting me back.
You're welcome. Dr. Michael Lubell is professor of physics at City College of the City University of New York and director of public affairs at the American Physical Society. He joins us in our New York studios. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you very much, Ari. Pleasure to be here.
You're welcome. Sean Otto is the CEO and co-founder of ScienceDebate.org. He is also author of Fool Me Twice, Fighting the Assault on Science in America. He joins us from NPR in St. Paul. Welcome back to Science Friday.
Thank you, Ira. Glad to be here.
Sean, let me begin with you. You've been trying to get presidents to debate science for 4 years now, since 2008, but with no success. And yet you haven't given up, and in fact, you've released the 2012 version of Top American Science Questions.
That's right. We just feel that this is a new century, and these questions are coming to dominate and affect the lives of voters everywhere. And if candidates for president can debate the economy, even though they're not economists, or foreign policy, even though they're not diplomats or generals, or faith and values, even though they're not pastors or priests, they ought to also feel comfortable debating the big science questions that affect every voter's lives.
David Gergen, when we talked with Gwen Ifill today about where that question came from, she said she gets hundreds of questions being an anchor for those debates, and she felt that no one would ever ask a science question in the presidential debate, so she decided she would have to ask one in the vice presidential debate. Why won't presidential candidates participate in such a debate?
Well, that's a hard question. Obviously, as we've just heard, they should be. But there are so many other issues that have crowded out science, and yet here we are again, that the questions of jobs and deficits are clearly going to dominate these debates. But I do think that we've just learned what the structure of the 2012 debates is going to be. They're going to be three presidential, one vice presidential. And each one of the presidential is going to have six pods in effect, six areas that will receive 15 minutes apiece. Given that structure, and the first debate will be on domestic, and then the last will be divided between domestic and foreign, I think there, you know, that provides at least 9 pods for, say, domestic-related questions. I think at least one of those could be on climate change and related scientific issues, and might well be on technology as well. I think there's a real possibility that the Presidential Debate Commission will do that, but it will not be a long debate. It will not be sufficient, but at least it will get it on the table.
Interesting, yeah. Dr. Lubell, as our presidential candidates and the media taking their cue from the voters, what do the voters, the polls that you conduct, tell you about public attitudes about science?
That's a very good question, Ira. And following the 2010 congressional election, a group of organizations got together and we decided we ought to find out what the public actually thinks. And there's good news and bad news. The good news is the public does appreciate science. They actually love scientists. I think they're wonderful people, and since I'm one of them, I love to hear that. The bad news is that when you probe, they really don't know why. Their knowledge is poor. They don't know what the benefits are other than medicine that they relate to when they see their doctor. They have no clue where all their devices, their entertainment comes from. They have no idea. And what this translates into, unfortunately, with a diminishing trust in government, is a diminishing trust in the government's ability to do anything on science that will benefit the public.
So they love science and they love scientists, but they haven't got a clue about what scientists do.
We're good salesmen, I guess. No, they really don't.
And it crosses all parties and all political spectrum?
We did the polling based upon 4 groups, Republican primary voters, Democratic primary voters, swing voters, and self-identified Tea Partiers. It cuts across all. There are differences. Democrats, because of their greater trust in government, tend to think that the government can do more mm-hmm. for science. But the reality is, when you probe, you find that the knowledge base is very, very weak.
Wow. David Gergen, is that a problem? Are scientists failing to effectively communicate what they do?
Well, Sean Otto has been arguing for some time, and as Michael Lubell, that the scientific community needs to be much more engaged in the public dialogue. It needs to be out in front far more. I would say that starts, frankly, at the White House. I think the science advisor of the White House ought to be a very prominent public figure. The current science advisor for President Obama happens to be a former colleague and a friend, John Holdren. He's first class, but he's been kept out of sight as a science advisor. I think he ought to be out there regularly in the public dialogue and on television on a Sundays and things like that, because there are so many of these issues which are crucial. I don't know quite why the White House hasn't showcased him, but I remember, you know, it wasn't long ago we had surgeon generals who had enormous impact on the public by being out talking about health issues. And I think we need the same here. But then beyond that, universities, scientists, you know, it's understandable they spend most of their time on their basic research, but I think we ought to be doing far more to get them out. The public does have an appetite for this. You know, the New York Times on Tuesdays runs this science section. And I've been told in the past that the Tuesday edition of the New York Times is the bestseller of the week. And I think that's partly because of the science section. Bill Broad mm-hmm. told me that from there. People have curiosity. If it's presented well, people want to read about it. They're curious about it, not only about how this is affecting weather, but whether the internet causes brain cancer. The cell phones cause brain cancer. There are all sorts of issues. My wife, who's not a scientist, avidly reads the Tuesday science section of the New York Times, as do many of my friends. Because even though they're not scientists, it's presented in such an interesting way.
That's what's so baffling to me about why then you can't get a question about science in these presidential debates or even in the congressional debates. You know, everybody's interested in it, but they're not, you know, they don't bring it up. Do you think, David, the journalists are just afraid themselves that they don't know enough about it?
Well, that's an interesting argument as well. You know, it's because it's not part of the national dialogue. It's not in the news. Cable does not embrace this kind of thing. Fortunately, you do with this, with this Science Friday. There are an awful lot of people I know who said, "Oh, yeah, are you going to be on with Ira? That's really interesting. It's got a terrific show." But I think that political journalists think that this is not what the public really wants to hear about, and they don't do it. I think, but. with more encouragement from the scientific community, it frankly takes, on issues like this, it does take national leadership. Mm-hmm. You have to have a certain number of people in the culture who step forward and say, this is really important. We need to talk about it. It starts with the president, but it includes many other people who are head of institutions. And it ought to be, you know, it ought to be the major research universities of this country have got to be out there talking about this. And how much funding we have for basic research from the government, how this ought to be allocated, and that sort of thing. I think it's also partly helping the public understand what huge benefits we've had from scientific research. How many people know that it was government-sponsored research that really brought us the Internet? There would have been no Steve Jobs had it not been for the government investing way back when through DARPA.
Mm-hmm. Sean Otto?
Yeah.
What do you think about that? I mean,
I think what David was saying is absolutely right. Number one, it does take leadership. And leadership is about that kind of vision of seeing the problem, identifying it, and saying we've got to take some steps to address this. And we need a lot more of that. The scientific community in the United States has really been too quiet for a long time, and we've seen some of the results. The other side of it, I think, Ira, is the point that you made, and I think that there probably is some confirmation bias there, that political reporters and news directors and editors come largely out of the humanities. Their last science class was more than likely high school chemistry or something like that. And they just aren't interested, and they assume the public isn't interested either. And that we started getting that kind of feedback in 2007 and 2008 when we were first pushing for this. And so we decided to explore that, and we did a national poll, and we repeated it this year and found, as David said, that that's just not the case. The public is massively interested. We asked the question this time around, should the presidential candidates participate in a debate to discuss key science-based challenges facing the United States, such as healthcare, climate change, energy, education, innovation, and the economy? And we had overwhelming support for that. Roughly 85% of likely voters.
Wow. All right. We're going to come back and talk lots more about this this issue. Our number is 1-800-989-8255. You can tweet us at SciFry. Also, you can go to our website at sciencefriday.com and our Facebook page at /SciFry. We'll come back and talk more about bringing science into the debate, into the discussion this presidential year and also congressional election year in the Senate. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this break. This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about why science is a non-issue in the presidential elections and how you might want to get it into the elections and into your local elections, too. My guests are David Gergen, professor of public service and director at the Center for Public Leadership at Harvard Kennedy School, Michael Lubell, professor of physics at City College of the City University of New York, and Director of Public Affairs, American Physical Society, Sean Otto, CEO and co-founder of ScienceDebate.org. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. David, so is the answer talking about science in a different way to get people interested, not talking about the science value, but what it does for society?
I think that's a large part of it, and I think it has to be done on a continuing basis. For example, I've talked in the past, president from Caltech and other universities. I think it would be very helpful if on an annual basis in many states, the leading research institutions invited members of Congress to come and spend a day to hear about the kind of breakthroughs, the investigations that are going on, so that they became more better acquainted. We've got too many people in Congress, and frankly, a growing number of people in Congress, unfortunately, many of them coming in from the right on the Republican Party, who don't believe in science anymore. They fundamentally just question it, starting with climate change, but, you know, with many other issues such as creationism. And I do think that that's a question of reaching out, but I want to come back to this question of the President of the United States showcasing science. Sean Otto has spoken out about this in the past. President Obama came in with two issues that were very related to science. One was health care, and the other was climate change. And he did make a decision early on to put the emphasis on health care. And you know, we went from a visit to Copenhagen, which was a big climate change conference early in his administration where he was there, to Rio recently, which where he was not. And there was, you know, very little conversation about it, the administration. If you're really going to put climate change on the map, the president has to lead on that. He has to say this is an important issue. And I frankly think both parties are letting this critical issue slip away from us. It's almost as if we're resigning ourselves to what come what may.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that this the climate change, it appears to be a climate change with the dry weather and the rain, missing rain, might change people's minds this year?
Absolutely. The survey, well, we were just hearing about that, yeah. Brookings survey as your show opened,
yeah.
And I think it's a very hot topic for people, as the very uneven weather we've had, the droughts that we're experiencing across the United States, almost to historic proportions. Now we are learning that the heat is may pierce the layers of the ozone. It was in the papers this morning. Those are issues that are very much on people's minds, but somebody has to give voice to them. Mm. And at the national political level, where the president directs his focus, the press will often follow.
Shawnada, what kinds of questions would you ask if you had? Give me the top two on your list in the debate if you had were able to ask them.
Well, the first one is on innovation and the economy, and we would ask them about the role of science and technology, how it's really driven half of our economic growth since World War II, when the federal government first prioritized peacetime science mobilization, but several recent reports question our continued leadership in these vital areas. So the question would be, what policies will best ensure that America remains the world leader in innovation? And the number two question is the existential one we've been talking about with climate change. The Earth's climate is changing, and there is concern about the potentially adverse effects of these changes on life on the planet. What is your position on cap and trade, carbon taxes, and other policies proposed to address global climate change? And what steps can we take to improve our ability to tackle challenges like climate change that cross national boundaries? And I think that that's a very important part of the question here.
Mm-hmm. Michael LaBelle, what do you think?
Well, I want to come back to something that David said just a couple of minutes ago about the leadership issue and the importance of having the president, not only the president speak out, but his advisors. Science used to be an inside the beltway issue. You could get policies promulgated simply by dealing with people in government. What we're finding today, I think, is that the lack of trust in government requires a dialogue with the public. And scientists have been absent in that for the most part. And in mm-hmm. fact, it's one of the reasons that we convened a meeting in early June to talk about that very issue. How do we get the scientists out in front of the public, not to talk about the science, but to talk about how the science affects people's lives?
Mm-hmm.
And also to get people who are actively known in the public, in the entertainment industry and elsewhere, who are passionate about science, to talk about it, because without the public dialogue, I don't think today's world that in Washington we're going to see very much action mm-hmm. on very many things.
The president has had two science fairs at the White House, where no one has ever had a science fair at the White House. He's gone to factories that are making renewable energy products. He's been out there trying to say, we can create new jobs if we invest in these new kinds of economies. What is he not doing?
Well, let me say this to begin with, that I think President Obama certainly has been far more vocal on this issue. It took President Clinton, I think, David may remember this, but I think it was 7 years into his administration before he actively engaged mm-hmm. in science. I mean, I think President Obama has a passion for it, and he has done what he can do up until now. But I think the issue that we've seen in the public polling is that we're not winning the battle. And therefore, I think any president who's sitting in the Oval Office today has to do more. It's not sufficient to do what he has done. He's done a lot, but it's got to go way beyond this, because we are facing a crisis. We face a whole set of them, economically and also, as we've been talking about, on climate change. But there are many, many other issues with energy critical elements, things that we have to deal with the Chinese government, a whole host of them. And I think that we are seeing the focus on science itself, but not on the science as it applies to people's lives.
1-800-999-8255. Let's go to the phones to Francine in Denver. Hi, Francine.
Hi. I think Washington knows the interest in science is great, and that it's a lose-lose situation to for the candidates themselves to bring it up at the debates. David touched on this, but you know, from Romney's point of view, it would be completely lose-lose. He either would appear ignorant if he catered to his base, or anger the base. I mean, I think it's a very cynical and in that way smart move not to touch the subject as being of no advantage.
Well, what about...
Of course, for the public interest, it's crucial, but for winning an election, I think it would be a lose-lose situation.
Why not have the president or any other Democrats who are running who believe that way, then bring it up themselves in a debate? Ask yourself the question. You know, if it's not going to be asked, and if you think it's a political winner,
get his advisors to do that. But would it even help Obama? I'm not sure.
David, what do you think?
Look, I. At a certain level, I think the reason so many people are cynical about politics is they think that their politicians are ducking. And no more recent example, more perfect example than the following up on Colorado and the shootings out there, and both candidates have ducked the question of assault weapons bans, even though they've been for them in the past. They won't say a word about it now and say the laws are perfectly sufficient. And in the same way, I think they're ducking climate change. I think they're ducking some of these other issues, but especially climate change. I think President Obama has had these fears, that's for sure. But he sure hasn't been willing to stand up and say, you know, we need a gasoline tax as a way not only to help solve the federal budget deficit, but in order to get ourselves in better position on the energy front. I think at certain level you've got to ask people to have guts and courage to stand up and do what is right. And I don't think we're seeing that, frankly, from either party at this point. The Republican Party has turned far right and is you know, pandering to this sense that science is fraudulent, that it's all ideological, that it's all being made up, which you're hearing from the Tea Party and others. And on the left, it's sort of, you know, running from reality. And it's discouraging when you look at it. This country can be can once again be the great leader in manufacturing and other areas, given the prowess we have in our universities, given the kind of discoveries that are going on. But we've got to invest in it in order to get there. And the fact that we're letting these numbers drift down in terms of how much we invest at the governmental level, just makes you very despairing about where we are in politics. Someday somebody's going to come along and try to turn this around. But if we let it go too long, it's going to be very, very dangerous.
Sean Otto, you think that science debate would be a good way for the candidates to sway undecided voters? Explain that.
Well, I do, yeah.
Because they're the key voters they're always looking at.
Absolutely. And most of those voters are disaffected Republicans and independents, moderate Republicans, that both went for Obama last time around. And he's got to capture them again, and that's the battleground where Romney's got to try and take votes away from him. Most of those people are pro-science. They're pragmatists. They're not driven by ideology. And so having a debate on some of these issues actually would be a way to speak to those particular voters and to contrast the candidates with each other. Now, there's an argument for Romney that he's got to do that to move away a little bit from his base after he gets the endorsement. And there's an argument for Obama that that's where the battle's going to happen. He's tried to lay out some of that, I think, in his Rolling Stone interview. I think some of that is in defense against the Koch brothers funded ads against him. He can say that's not about energy or shipping jobs overseas. It's about climate change. So I think that there are reasoned arguments on both sides.
1-800-989-8255 is our number if you'd like to talk about what's going on in the debate. Michael, do you think that's fertile ground to give undecided voters, or what does your survey show about this?
I think the problem, I mean, Sean and I have actually talked about this, and I think one of the difficulties, as the caller pointed out, a presidential candidate, and I'll use Governor Romney as an example, is not terribly conversant on scientific issues. Mm-hmm. And to expect somebody, and I've done a lot of work on campaigns, maybe not as much as David, but I've had a long history of this. You don't want to expose a candidate to embarrassment. And that could happen. I think that President Obama would probably do very well. I think this is an issue that he's been concerned about, and he would probably do well in it. But I think Governor Romney's handlers would say, stay away from this as far as possible. I'd like to make one other point. And that is that when we look and at the declining investment in science, when we compare that to the gross domestic product, it is a very serious issue. The United States is very much like a high-tech company. I think Sean pointed out, or David pointed out, the 70% is actually the figure today, gross domestic GDP growth related to science and technology. And at the same time, the percentage that we're investing is going down and down and down. Our trade deficit gets worse and worse and worse within the high-tech sector. We're not on a good path. We have to reverse it. I don't think the public recognizes it, and we've got to get that out in the debate.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from NPR. As far as bringing it up as a topic, science in general and investment in science research, on one of your surveys, I'm looking at one of the key points. It says nearly 7 in 10 voters approve of using taxpayer funds to sponsor scientific research. And among all voters, and the percentage of that approve among key voter groups, 54% of Tea Party supporters say they should do that.
That was one of the biggest surprises. I have to say, there were many things in the survey that I think a number of us had anticipated. This was one that blew us away, because we know that the trust in government and among Tea Party people is low, particularly among Tea Party people. And yet, they actually wind up saying, if I'm going to have taxpayer money spent, spend it on science. Remarkable. This is a message we try to get out to politicians. And I'll mention one other thing. We took the iPad, mm-hmm. Steve Jobs' great creation, and we deconstructed it for staffers of what is called the Republican Study Committee. These are the most conservative members of Congress. They number now about 175. They were blown away as well when they saw what was inside the iPad, where it all came from, and it was almost all government-funded research. Steve Jobs was a genius. He knew how to take those discoveries and create a product that he had the vision to see the public was going to embrace.
Hmm. Yeah, so Aaron, I want to go back to this.
Yes, David.
And that is, I do think that if you can bring the public inside some of these things and bring members of Congress inside some of these laboratories, in effect, not only can they more fully appreciate what's going on, say especially in medical research, and people really love that when they understand it, and they become very excited about what you can accomplish. But there is also in our society, there is among people who are in the humanities, there is now sort of a pessimism about the future. There's sort of a sense we can't cope. And when you bring people into technologies and basic research and science, there's so much excitement and positive energy about the future that I think that the more people get exposed to this, the better they'd feel about what we can accomplish. The more we would raise our sights as a people and realize, you know, there are still great things out there we can do, and we may be on the verge of some huge mm-hmm. breakthroughs. It would get people very excited about that, and I think that would really improve the morale of the country and bring a lot more support to the kinds of things we really ought to be doing.
Mm-hmm. Sean, about time for one last question. What about on the local level, on congressional and senatorial levels, asking those questions too?
Oh, absolutely. Well, we did take a subset of this list of 14, a subset of 8, and we have that on our site at sciencedebate.org. They are appropriate for congressional races and also lower-level races. And this is really important for two reasons. One is that legislation initiates in Congress, and there's little that the president can do if there's not legislation to back it up. And the second reason is that a lot of the people in lower-level races are eventually going to be in Congress or running for president. And we've got to get them on board and understanding how important science is to the future of the country.
And these are questions you, as a citizen, can go to a local meeting and ask what they won't ask on national television. All right. Gentlemen, thank you very much. We've run out of time. David Gergen, professor of public service and director of the Center for Public Leadership at Harvard Kennedy School, also senior political analyst at CNN. Dr. Michael Lubell, professor of physics at City College, the City University of New York, director of public affairs at the American Physical Society. Sean Otto, CEO and co-founder of ScienceDebate.org, also author of Fool Me Twice, Fighting the Assault on Science in America. Gentlemen, thank you all for taking time to be with us today.
Thanks, Eric.
You're welcome. Thank you very much, Thanks, Eric.
We're going to take a quick break, change gears, talk about microchips the size of your thumb that can mimic human organs and why that's important. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this break.
This podcast of Science Friday is brought to you by Audible.com, a provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. Since you listened to the Science Friday podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook of your choice when you try Audible free for 30 days. As a sci-fi listener, you might enjoy this title, Spy the Lie. Former CIA officers teach you how to detect deception. To try Audible today with a free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/Science Friday. All the details are on their website. That's audible.com/Science Friday.